AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
Somebody flipped on the green for rally light in the soy complex this morning. We'll find out what's happening there at the bottom of the hour from Brian. But first, we'll check up on some initiatives designed to boost economic activity around agriculture in Iowa. And then it's time for the Farmer Forum.
Live from the very center of the known ag broadcast universe via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk.
Wow.
This morning we begin with a conversation with Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagg. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Kevin Papp and Tim Recker. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lowry.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. Yeah. You know, and actually, the conversation that we're going to have with Margie, it's going to center around 4R nutrient stewardship.
Oh, good.
And we're going to pick it up in the Farmer Forum with Tim Recker and Kevin Papp and start right there with 4R. You know, how many acres are they applying the 4Rs of nutrient stewardship on their farms? Mm-hmm. And I got a feeling with both with both Tim and Kevin, it's going to be a pretty high percentage. But Margie's going to fill us in on some big goals for the 4R nutrient stewardship initiatives. So looking forward to that. How you doing, buddy? Everything good?
Everything's great. Another great day here in central Iowa. Oh. It's beautiful outside.
Yep. Right. I think the reason that Kevin decided he could go ahead and do the show today is because it is raining up in South Dakota. It's raining in southeast Nebraska. It's raining in western Minnesota. And I would guess that it's starting to get into Kevin's neck of the woods already. It hasn't gotten to Wrecker yet over there in northeast Iowa, but it looks like it might be on its way in that direction. All right, man. We've got a lot of ground to cover this morning, so let's go ahead and get started. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, President Biden reportedly wants to secure a vote on the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill and a public agreement from Democrats on the parameters of the Build Back Better package before he travels abroad to Italy and Scotland on October 30. A bipartisan infrastructure bill vote is contingent upon them getting a solid reconciliation framework in place. Biden on Tuesday described a more limited vision to Democratic lawmakers of a scaled back $1.75 to $1.9 trillion government overhaul package.
Yeah, Davis, I don't even know what to think on this anymore. And maybe I've been there for a while, but I've been trying to remain optimistic about where this is headed. I'm starting to lose my optimism over all of this. And, you know, yesterday, even when I was talking with Representative Graves, I said, come on, tell me something that's in that reconciliation bill, the Build Back Better package, that you would like to see pulled out and discussed and negotiated and passed. And he really didn't even want to go there, did he?
He had nothing.
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, it's not that he had nothing. He said, let's do it all. Yeah. That would be the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Let's pull each piece out and debate each item individually and let it pass on its own merit rather than piling everything into a reconciliation bill.
I don't think the Biden administration has enough time for that, actually. Senator Joe Manchin and Senator John Tester expressed opposition to including a carbon tax in the massive social spending plan as Democrats scramble to make good on their pledge to combat climate change. Asked about a carbon tax, which would effectively place a fee on carbon dioxide and methane emissions, Manchin said the idea was not under discussion.
And if it is under discussion, I think Tester has voiced his opposition to such a plan in the past. So I think we'd be okay with Tester.
USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack will be in Iowa today and Thursday for the World Food Prize and will meet with Mexican Secretary of Agriculture and Rural Development Victor Manuel Villalobos Arambula. The issues of GMO corn, dairy, and potatoes are likely to be on the agenda. Vilsack is also scheduled to join striking Deere employees in Des Moines, Iowa today, one of several political leaders who have showed support for the union workers.
Yeah, nuclear, you said Victor Manuel Villalobos Aramabula, and I said his counterpart, said Vilsack's counterpart.
His counterpart.
Good work.
Either is acceptable. Thank you. Gracias. Nuclear power would play an important role in underpinning certain countries' plans to cut greenhouse gas emissions. The UK and France recently announced plans to invest in nuclear technology. China is planning a 40% increase in nuclear capacity over the next 5 years. And India is building 7 new reactors. Is this the direction the green movement really wants us to go?
Well, it should be. It's a very green source of energy. I don't know. I would think that it's a direction they'd want us to go. But Germany shut it all down, and look at what they're doing now.
Well, rising fertilizer prices in China this year have prompted a continued focus on those supplies by the National Development and Reform Commission. The central planner has outlined efforts on the fertilizer supply situation with NDRC spokeswoman Meng Wei, saying they will make sure there are adequate supplies of coal, electricity, natural gas, and sulfur to produce chemical fertilizers. California Governor Gavin Newsom declares a statewide drought emergency, and companies continue to raise prices, taking advantage of consumers' willingness to pay up for some products, according to the Wall Street Journal. Chip.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Let's bring in Margie Echelkamp, editor of The Scoop. Good morning, Margie.
Hey, good morning, Chip.
All right, so tell us about this. There's some big plans for the 4R nutrient stewardship over the next few years.
Yes, last week on World Fertilizer Day, which is October 13th, the Fertilizer Institute announced a program that it's developed with its ag retail members that sets a goal in the next 9 years, by 2030, that there will be 70 million acres under 4R nutrient stewardship practices. Now, this would represent nearly a quarter, 25% of the cropland acres in the U.S. And as TFI president and CEO Corey Rosenbusch told me, it's a stretch goal. They think it's very attainable. And this is going to be marking day one of how they measure these practices are put into place across acres in the U.S.
Okay. So right source, right rate, right time, right place. That's the four R's.
That's the four R's. And any acres that are applying, any of those tenants would apply here. So they worked really carefully to structure a framework. So if, for example, a farmer is doing a split application, if they're deploying variable rate technology on their fertilizer applications, all of them would qualify under this program.
Okay. You know, I think the concept of the four R's is widely, widely, widely accepted, isn't it?
You know, I think back to what IFCA President Jean Payne told me shortly before her retirement. And she said, when agriculture has a good stewardship story, that's the way we always win. And 4R nutrient stewardship provides agriculture a wonderful stewardship story and also business promises and how they are efficiently deploying that fertilizer dollar.
Yeah, absolutely. It's too expensive now. You got to do it right. If you don't do it right, you're missing out. All right. Thanks, Margie. That's Margie Echelkamp, editor of The Scoop. We've got Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nagg up next here on AgriTalk.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
I learned the hard way real early in life.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. You know, yes, Davis, that the four R nutrient concepts, okay, or nutrient stewardship. It's like Margie and I were talking about at the end, with the way fertilizer prices are now, you better pay attention and get all four of the R's right if you're going to get your money's worth out of what you're going to spend on fertilizer for 2022.
You got to maximize those inputs expenditures, Chip.
That's right. That's right. And being as efficient with it as you possibly can is going to be really important in making money in 2022. All right, here's a guy that practices the 4R concepts and stewardship. It's Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nag. How are you, Mike?
Hey, I'm great. It's great to be back.
Good. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad that you are here. How's harvest going?
Well, I tell you what, for us in Northwest Iowa, we're actually done as of the end of last week. And I know there's some folks working awfully hard, making a ton of progress, although we've got some rain that kind of scattered across the state overnight and into today. So I know there's a few folks that are going to have to tap the brakes, but boy, folks are really working hard to put a ribbon on this harvest.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to make a drive over to Columbus, Ohio this week. That's where I'm sitting right now. And it was like every mile along the way, Secretary Nag, you could see the guys out in the field. They were getting after it. And it's got to be one of the busiest harvest 48 hours that we've ever seen. It's got to be, because it was just such clear weather. So it's good to hear that you're wrapped up.
You're right about that. And I mean, have you seen the skies, the blue skies, the perfect conditions? It's just been awesome to, you know, you're talking about fertilizer. I know there's a lot of that going on. We're just, honestly, the weather has cooperated so well this fall. And again, folks, we're working hard, so stay safe out there. But yes, we all want to get through this in one piece. But I know there's some folks putting some long hours in right now.
Yeah, that, no doubt about that. No doubt. Stay safety first. Okay. I want to talk about something that we have talked about with a good friend of AgriTalk, Chad Ingles from Northeast Iowa, because he really pushed the Butchery Innovation and Revitalization Program, and the state of Iowa started taking applications for grants from that brand new program on Monday, right?
Yes. That's right. Really, Representative Ingles has done a fantastic job of pushing this issue and really leading it. And I tell you what, for being a freshman legislator taking on a significant lift like this, Chad, of course, has got great credentials and knows ag and knows what he's talking about. And so he did a great job moving this piece of legislation through. But yeah, at the end of session, we end up with a $750,000 grant program that's all about targeting those small and mid-sized meat lockers, meat processors. We learned a few things last year, so we were able to run a CARES Act-funded program to help provide equipment for meat lockers and, you know, help them increase their capacity or, frankly, to deal with some of their workforce challenges, as in having not enough people. Yeah. Maybe they needed a piece of equipment that could help with that. We learned a lot. We knew there was a ton of demand and still a lot of opportunity. And so to be able to roll this program out and really go to the next level is big. In fact, this afternoon, we're going to meet with we've got a task force that we've put together. It was connected to this legislation that's really looking at workforce challenges in those meat lockers. And so we've got a group coming together this afternoon to talk about those things. What can we do as a state to help meet that or address that gap in that demand for workers in meat lockers?
Excellent. Excellent. And this is really kind of stage one of this program, because there's going to be an effort to also coordinate with some of the community colleges so to do some meat cutting classes so that there's skilled workers at these meat plants.
We think there's a variety of needs from a workforce standpoint. And this is what we've learned through surveying. And I get out and meet with a lot of these lockers, and I'm talking with owners, and I want to hear what their challenges are. And really, it's a multitude of issues. One, we need workers. We just need people in the facility to help and do cleaning and a variety of things. And then, yes, you've got that need for folks that can do the – specialty cutting or the specialty processing, or maybe somebody to work on food safety programs. And so we need an all of the above approach. Community colleges, Iowa State University Meat Lab is a great resource for that higher level training that's needed. And then, you know, I think we're probably going to have to look at enhancing some sort of an apprenticeship program, because, you know, yeah. Chip, you and I could walk in the door, but you know, even they'd have to train us, and we'd have to learn a thing or two, and we'd have to work at the elbow of a skilled worker, and there's some value in growing your own and training your own. And so I think it's those combination of those things and hopefully some other ideas that come forward as well.
It's outstanding. It was a well thought out piece of legislation that got bipartisan support at a critical time, and man, it is so cool to see this moving forward. I hope that the state of Iowa continues to support it wholeheartedly, because it's much needed. Let's talk about another program, the Choose Iowa Marketing and Promotion Grant Program. What exactly is this?
Well, this too, it's you can kind of think of it as it's connected to in some ways the butchery and the meat locker piece. It's a similar type concept. Again, learning from some things we experienced in the last year and a half, and that generally we've got an opportunity here, right? Folks, consumers are more and more interested in knowing where their food comes from. And we have a need, just as society, and looking at our food and ag supply chain, what are some ways that we can shorten the supply chain, right? We can better connect producers with consumers. And so I asked for, kind of again, coming out of last year, some lessons learned, I asked for a program to allow us to provide some matching grant dollars. This one's a $250,000 program, and we'll provide matching dollars to, and we kept it kind of open, Chip, because as I travel the state, I meet with folks, you know, for instance, let's say a dairy that would like to do on-farm processing of dairy products, make cheese and yogurts and sell those at farmers markets or to grocery stores or consumer direct to consumer. We might have some people that want to get into the brewing or distilling business. You know, it might be that you're a fruit and veg producer and you need some equipment to process package your produce and get it into the marketplace. It's a variety of things. And so we want to be really open to those ideas and be able to fund some really good projects. So we just launched that this week. Those applications are due by the middle of December. For more information on all of this, you can go to the Iowa Department of Ag website, iowaagriculture.gov.
Okay, iowaagriculture.gov. To me, Secretary Nag, this is no idea is a bad idea. Tell us about it. Let's see what we can do.
That's exactly right. And, you know, again, it may be that you need, you might be trying to sell meat direct to consumers and you need refrigeration, or you might need some trucking capabilities to get your product to the marketplace, or maybe you need a training program for your workers. I'm trying to play this role of the right role for government, which is we don't have all the great ideas. People out there have got the great ideas. And what's a way for us to take that, fund the best projects, and really make a difference? That's what we're looking at.
Cool. Very good. Secretary Vilsack and his counterpart from Mexico are going to be in your state, in our state, the next couple of days. What do you hope Secretary Vilsack shares with his counterpart from Mexico? Ethanol's got to be near the top of the list, doesn't it?
There's a couple issues that I think we must put on the radar or talk about at a high level, and that's one, yes, absolutely, ethanol and the opportunity for an expansion of that marketplace. But two, we've got a significant issue brewing in the form of biotech trait approvals and banning products being imported into Mexico. For instance, biotech corn and genetically engineered corn, and that's a problem. And I know that that's on Secretary Vilsack's mind. And frankly, I've been participating or watching some of the World Food Prize dialogue conversations this morning. Just clicked off of that before I called you. And, you know, the topic of the safety of biotech enhanced crops is very much being talked about today, and the long, decades long safety record of those products. So those are the types of things we've got to raise with Mexico and certainly ensure that, you know, we worked hard as a country to secure the USMCA trade agreement. That provides the framework to have these kinds of discussions. Boy, we've got to really go work hard to make sure that we can continue to export products to Mexico and Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Secretary Nag, it's always a very enlightening conversation when we get you on AgriTalk. We need to do it more often.
Absolutely. I always love talking with you guys. And, you know, again, to everybody out there, work safe. And I'm excited as we get this harvest starting to get it buttoned up.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. That's Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nag. We got the Farmer Forum up next on AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beige soybeans have backed off of the highs, but they're working on the fifth consecutive day of gains. It's starting to turn into an impressive move.
Yeah, it really is, Chip. We've got broad-based buying across the soy complex this morning, so soy oil is pushing sharply to the upside. That's triggering those strong gains that you talked about in soybeans, and soy meal's participating. So to get all three of the markets within the soy complex to participate actively to the upside is quite the feat, and you know, it probably suggests that this short-term move might have a little bit more left in it yet.
Yeah, you know, the way that this meal market, we haven't said this for a long time, but the way that this meal market has traded the last couple of days, it kind of feels like maybe there's some meal sales coming, whether it be to into the Philippines or Indonesia or maybe even China.
Yeah, you know, I think we'll see tomorrow in the weekly export sales, and we might have to wait until next week's report. But you know, we got to that low $300 range in the December contract, and that's been a value buy for quite some time, and it triggered buyer interest again.
Right, very good. All right, take us on over to livestock trade. A little bit of strength in feeder cattle.
Yeah, so the feeders, they're trying to work to the upside a little bit here, despite the strength in the corn market. So, you know, trading in step with corn as opposed to in opposite directions there. Live cattle really pretty quiet so far this morning, just waiting on active cash cattle trade to get going, and it might be much later in the week before that happens. And then hogs, they've been all over the place. They filled that September 27th gap, but tried to work higher and then backed off.
All right, that's Brian Grady, Pro Farmer.
A little cold weather never hurt anybody, but with typical number 2 diesel, it can do a number on your field equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn. That's how Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster Seasonally Enhanced optimizes cold weather performance. Or stick with your fair weather friend, typical number 2. Your choice. Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
It's time for the Farmer Forum, and the Farmer Forum is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement. It brings farmers and the sustainability community together around the future of farming by bringing profitable, planet-friendly farming practices into the mainstream. The movement is organized by Trust in Food, which is a Farm Journal initiative in partnership with the Farm Journal Foundation. To learn more about it, go to www.agweb.com/ACAM. And let's get this Farmer Forum started. Welcome back. I'm Chip. Got Davis is hanging out there someplace.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah.
You bet. You bet. And so is Tim Recker from Northeast Iowa. Recker, welcome back to AgriTalk. Yep. How are you?
Hey, Chip, good morning. It's a great morning, a little liquid sunshine this morning to start out, but we're going to have another beautiful harvest day.
Excellent. How things stand there, Tim? Are you getting things close to wrapped up?
I'm going to call it third quarter in the football game for us.
Okay.
And for a couple reasons. So my first day of soybean harvest, my entire family was had COVID, so we got to spend 10 days in the combine, to, you know, to stay away from other people.
Right.
And that was actually a welcome 10 days of combining beans, and then we had about 10 days of wet weather. So it's been a little challenging harvest, but with the yields we've had, it's just been phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. I assume that the family is doing well now.
Everybody's doing great. Everybody's
good.
Doing great. Came through it fine. Not a problem. And just made us even more resilient to what we're doing here and why we got to continue to keep forging on.
Very cool. Very cool. Kevin Papp up in Minnesota, president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau. Kevin, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. We're running the windshield wipers a little bit up here, but we're on day 23 of harvest. It's been a good harvest run.
Okay, what quarter are you in then when it comes to harvest? Are you getting into the fourth quarter?
I think we are in the fourth quarter. We finished our beans last night. Very few beans in the area, maybe a little bit after peas or seed beans that just came late for seed. On the corn, kind of feels like we can see the end. I guess technically we can see the end of the field. It's just a long ways across the field yet. But I'd say fourth quarter.
Okay. I got to ask you, Kevin, because you're up there in that area that was, I mean, it was, you were really dry midsummer, weren't you?
We were terrible. We'd had about 2 inches of rain from April 28th into the end of May. We went 49 days with less than an inch from July 7th into August. So we were pleasantly surprised. Our technology really came through. You know, we always talk about more crop per drop as we look at biotech, but we certainly had more crop per drop of rainfall and want to continue to have that access to that technology.
Man, cool. It's good for you. I mean, everybody, I can never say everybody, but there are many producers up in your area that, Dan Utech at New Vision at Worthington is calling beans a miracle this year, Kevin. That's how they produce.
It is, you know, in my 16 years as Farm Bureau president, the thing you learn is you don't talk about the weather and your yields on the radio, and I have a feeling we'll talk about both today, because there's always people around the state or around the region that aren't getting that rain or didn't have the crop. So want to recognize that as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly right. Guys, we started off the conversation today with Margie Eckelkamp, the editor of The Scoop for Farm Journal, and we were talking about the four R's stewardship, nutrient stewardship, the right source or product of nutrients, the right rate, the right time, and the right place. Tim, what percent of your acres do you apply the 4R concept?
Well, I've been following the 4Rs for several years and actually helped them do some promotional videos. And I actually am a big advocate of it. With the technology we have today, and I think Kevin even mentioned it, not just the seed technology, but the equipment technology, we can achieve all those, you know, the source, the rate, time, and place. We can do that so much easier. And as long as our no technology snafus, I mean, it's more easy today to do that than ever before. And especially when we're talking about higher price inputs.
Yeah.
I think we need to be spoon feeding this crop. We know the technology in the seed, and Kevin said, you know, when you don't have rain and we have the kind of bean yields we're having, it's just amazing. So we got that under control. That the companies are taking care of that. What's in our lap as farmers is the ability to do those 4Rs, and that's what goes directly applied to the field. That's something that us as farmers have that ability to do. It, you know, the days, Chip, when I started farming, you know, we just blanket spread things and, you know, you treat everything the same. That's just really not what we're doing anymore. It's so much different, and the technology is taking us there quicker and easier than we've ever done before.
Yep. What about you, Kevin? How much does the 4R concept influence what you do?
Well, I think it influences a lot. I mean, I spent a lot of years on the local volunteer fire department. I've had over 40 years in emergency medical service. And for over 40 years, we've talked about the five rights as we talk about medical procedures and medical prescriptions. And, you know, you always looked at your hand and asked yourself, you know, can I count all five fingers? Is it the right patient? Is it the right drug? Is it the right dose? Is it the right route? And is it the right time? So okay. I think a lot of people in agriculture have been using that philosophy for many, many years. And you can have three or four of those right and correct. And if one of them isn't, you're still in trouble. So, you know, I guess those five rights have been something I've been living with for 40 plus years.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, Recker mentioned and I talked about it too, but the rising cost of fertilizer and everything. Recker, is that influencing what you're doing this fall with cover crops, or are you going full steam ahead with your cover crop plan?
We're going full steam ahead. Actually, I haven't planted a cover crop yet, and I'm the one in the area that's usually the first to plant it, but I'm waiting to get more harvest done so that when we do good in there, we can just cover a lot of acres at one time. And I've done it long enough that I feel comfortable that I can do it late. We can have a small growth this fall, but you know, the real shine is next spring when that cover crop takes off. And my concern is a little bit, as you know, is Roundup, sourcing Roundup. And I usually plant in 3 foot tall cover crops in the spring, and it takes 44 ounces of product. And so I want to make sure I'm not in a big hurry to get cover crops planted. I just know we're going to get this corn out. We're going to get cover crops planted on all those acres. And then we'll address what happens next spring.
I hear a little bit of concern that you feel like you might not get the Roundup you need.
You know, that's the word that goes around in the community, but I feel like, I hope that we can get it. I don't have Roundup in house right now. I've actually taken some products for next year already. Some products that I could store and take, but I don't have Roundup. But you know, we've ran this scenario in our head, my brother and I. Okay, what happens if we don't have Roundup next year and we're sitting with 500-600 acres of cover crops that need to be terminated? What's our choices? You know, what do we do? Yeah. And so that's got some, you know, there's some other products that we can use, sure, but Roundup is the, you know, the product of choice in our operation. So there's some apprehension there of, you know, how we'll address it next spring.
Okay. The supply chain chaos that we're dealing with out there, Kevin, is it getting into your planning at all?
I think it's getting into everyone's concern. There's a lot of anxiety about what's the availability going to be. Certainly the price is out of this world on some things. And I think we're seeing some people say, I'm not going to go at this price. I'm just going to wait till spring and see what it looks like, what the availability is, what's actually in my shed for product. And that may have some effect on, you know, will I plant more beans next year just because I can't get the nutrients or can't get the product I want. So again, we're kind of into that harvest yet, so that's not full speed on those thoughts. But there's a lot of anxiety on not only the economic impact, but the availability, this just in time. And I don't think it's just Roundup, what I'm hearing. It's a lot of things, and including nutrients.
Yes, absolutely. It's everything that it's going to take for crop production and crop protection. I think is on everybody's watch list right now, no question about it. And, you know, and in a lot of ways, Kevin, it turns into a conversation then about higher food costs at the grocery store. I know that's something that you've been watching for many, many years.
It is. And we've got to continue to connect with consumers and have them understand agriculture better. And I think we did that with some of the just-in-time inventories in the livestock markets many times. So, again, it's something we've got to communicate.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. We off to a great start on this week's Farmer Forum. Tim Recker from Iowa, Kevin Papp from Minnesota. Okay, guys, here's the deal. Tim Vilsack, Secretary Vilsack, and his counterpart from Mexico are in the state of Iowa today, and I believe tomorrow. What is it that you hope Secretary Vilsack accomplishes with his counterpart from Mexico? We've got to talk about ethanol and where things stand right there. And then let's get your take on the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better plan, because I don't think there's any way to deny that they're connected.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
Yes.
We have got the Farmer Forum going today with Tim Recker from Iowa, Kevin Papp from Minnesota. Just a reminder that the Farmer Forum is brought to you by ACAM. Some of the sponsors of ACAM, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, American Farmland Trust, Certus Biologicals, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy, National Association of Conservation Districts, National Corn Growers, National Pork Board, Nutrient and Nutrient Egg Solutions. I mean, don't you want to be a part of this? Everybody wants to be a part of this. Sanderson Farms, Simpass, the Nature Conservancy, United Sorghum Checkoff Program, and Valent USA. Learn more about it. www.agweb.com/ACAM. Tim Recker, Secretary Vilsack, and his counterpart from Mexico, who Davis says his name very well. I butcher it. They are in the state of Iowa today. What do you hope they learn?
Well, you talked to Secretary Nag, and you mentioned two things, and the GMO corn production going into Mexico and ethanol, two of the biggest things. We got a WASDE report that says we have 15 billion bushels. We know we're not going to be short in product. We have to continue to keep channels open to get rid of ethanol and to get rid of grain. And our biggest customer is Mexico. And we have to keep that door open. Ethanol production is soaring right now, which is a good sign for us. Both of those channels are the most important for the Iowa farmer that's harvesting crop right now. One of the things that I just came across my email was John Doggett from NCGA asking us to support the Next Generation Fuels Act. I mean, three years ago, they talked about a RFS support, and they had so many calls during the fall with guys in the combine that he was getting calls and saying, hey, tell your guys to quit calling. We get it. So one of the things we can do is support the Next Generation Fuel Act. But however we can get, we got a big crop and we're going to work through it. The consumer should know that we can take care of fuel, food, fiber, and we still have excess crop left over. That's always a good feeling. That's what the American farmer does every year.
Yep, absolutely. You know, we're going to have a special show next Thursday. We're going to spend both shows, the morning and the afternoon show, talking about biofuels, talking about the Next Generation Fuels Act, talking about some of the steps, the next steps that need to happen to move the biofuels industry forward, the ethanol industry forward. So I'm looking forward to that. Kevin, on this GMO issue, on Mexico's stance on GMO corn coming into the country, Secretary Vilsack indicates that it's not going to be a problem going forward because our corn goes down there for feed. But it feels like it's a bigger issue than what Secretary Vilsack is letting on.
You know, one of the things we've got to remember is, you know, Mexico, they're one of our closest neighbors. They're one of our best customers. Neighbors, just like in farming, we know working together works. And we've got to work with them, and we need each other for a lot of things. And whether it's adding value through renewable fuels or anything else, we need to make sure that our technology is that we have that ability to use it. And again, I'm maybe a little more concerned than the secretary is talking, because we've got to have Mexico for a market. It's so important to us.
Yeah. You know, Kevin, I don't know if you've realized this or not, but you have circled around and landed on technology a few times in the conversation today. Is there something that's worrying you that the technology is not going to be available to us?
Well, I don't, you know, certainly the inventories is one okay. thing, but we've got to continue to make sure we've got research in that technology. Farming is all about continual improvement.
And amen.
If we can't continue to have that ability to do something better next year, either through practices or through products and technologies, we're not going to become more sustainable. I mean,
right.
that's the key, is sustainability. And you know, I always say farming's a lot being like a parent. You want to do the best job you can, but you always want to do better.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. I'm going to stick with Kevin on this one, because yesterday, Representative Sam Graves from Missouri was on the show. We talked about the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better plan. And I expressed a concern that they were going to kill the bill, the Build Back Better plan, which would take the infrastructure bill down as well. And he agreed that was a big concern. Do you see it that way?
Well, I think, you know, we've learned over the years in our state ag committees and on the ag committee in the House and the Senate that we've got to work together. You've got to have bipartisan support. You've got to have both sides engaged in those conversations. You've got to have both sides supporting that. We've heard that from, you know, ag committee chairmen, from Chairman Lucas, Peterson, Conaway. If we want strong legislation, strong policies, we've got to work together and do them this way. Otherwise, we're constantly going yeah. back and forth. Look what we're doing with Clean Water Act, you know, every administration, or trade yep. infrastructure is no different.
Yeah, that's right. What's your take on this, Wrecker?
We need infrastructure. I've talked on your show a couple times about infrastructure,
yep.
and I mean true infrastructure, whether it's rivers, transportation. We've seen interruption of supplies because of infrastructure. And that was a couple of years ago with LP. You know, we didn't have the ability to get it to us. So we that's the most important thing there is right now. Maybe not human infrastructure, but the real infrastructure that we all need to grow this economy.
Yeah, boy. And to put some restrictions on the use of some very important infrastructure like pipelines is just seems, it, I mean, the negative impact consequences of that decision are glaring at us every time we go to the pump and try to fill up now. Guys, good work this morning. Thank you so much. Kevin Papp from Minnesota, Tim Wrecker from Iowa. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Chip.
You bet. All right. Hey, thank you for listening. You got to come back this afternoon, man. Davis is going to buckle in. And he's going to have a conversation with Todd Bubba Horwitz for you. Tomorrow morning, we'll get into the efforts to build an AMA library for cattle.